I'm Brandi Cruz. Today on Undivided, not even SNL could write a script as absurd as the one being acted out right now in Olympia.
So would Gary Ridgway's rights be restored with this bill?
Yes, they would.
Plus, another implosion within the homeless industrial complex and... The state's teachers union continues its march into madness. That and more today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Happy Monday. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. This is Undivided, with now three ways to subscribe to our content. Isn't that exciting? We are now on Patreon, Locals, and X, formerly known as Twitter, although X was being a real SOB last night, trying to get, it's only our second week with X subscribers. Twitter's like, well, X. Elon's like, yeah, come and do your shows on X, then makes it incredibly difficult to upload an hour-long video. But I digress. I'll talk to Elon later, and we'll get it all sorted out. Man, we got a lot of content today. It was because the Thursday show was so jam-packed, we had to leave juicy stories for Monday, and I'm sure that this show is so jam-packed, we're just going to have to keep leaving juicy stories for the next day. But we'll try to get in as much as we possibly can. Some news that broke on Sundays with Subscribers yesterday that I want to make sure to share with all of you, because it speaks to, I think, not only the state of law enforcement, but also specifically the political prosecutions against police in Washington state and the impact it will have. So on Sundays with Subscribers yesterday, Pierce County Sheriff Ed Traer announced that he will retire at the end of the year. He will have served 40 years by then. He has been, you know, a figure in the public eye for a long time because he was the spokesperson for the Pierce County Sheriff's Office before becoming the sheriff. So he's, you know, people just know who he is, and they dealt with so many horrific crimes. You know, I think back to the case involving the two young boys who were killed by their father. So he has been, I think, the face of a lot of unfortunate things that have happened. He was also the subject of a political prosecution from Attorney General Bob Ferguson. And so I think combined with the fact that he said he's going to retire at the end of the year and maybe some freedom from that, man, he laid into AG Bob Ferguson on the show. But first, let me just play what he had to say about his retirement.
This next October, when my birthday comes, it'd be 3 months until the end of my term, and it'll give me 40 years on.
Wow.
And I'll be the longest tenured person on this department, and it's time for me to go. You know, 40 years on, I've been through many officer deaths. I've given flags to a couple widows. I've been to D.C. for 6 different funerals. It's time for the next person. One of the things I want to do is put the leadership in place for the next go around, and I believe I've done that. We're doing really good on the recruiting. We started a lot of new programs that nobody ever hears about because they won't tell you that in the news media too often. And it's time for the next person's term. It's time for me to move on and go do some nonprofit charity work, which has always kind of been my thing anyways, and just go do that full time.
Yeah, and I know that he's done some nonprofit charity work when it comes to the Powell boys who were killed by their dad, Josh, and, you know, just a ton of other things. But so that news broke. So this is going to start, you know, the rat race for who wants to be the next sheriff. And I'm sure it'll be all over the media today. But then, you know, we invited Ed on, and we actually wanted to have him come on the Sunday show to talk about what's happening with juveniles and crime and the juvenile justice situation. But, you know, we asked him about what happened to the Tacoma officers, and you had 3 Tacoma officers on trial for murder. They were acquitted, and given his personal experience of having been prosecuted unsuccessfully by Attorney General Bob Ferguson, sort of his thoughts and about what those officers went through. But man, I was not expecting Sheriff Traer to be so blunt in his feelings about Bob Ferguson.
Oh, it'd be terrible if he's our next governor. He's already weaponized the Attorney General's office. He's treated people like bullies. I mean, he sued the Value Village and lost and had to pay them money. He's sending out goofy checks, trying to buy votes. I mean, the list goes on and on with that guy. Can you imagine him as having the power of governor? That would be terrible for the citizens of Washington State. I don't care what side you're on. He has no fear in ruining people's lives. In empowering his employees to try and do the same thing, all in the name of trying to be governor. It's a strange thing. In fact, it seems like somebody needs to take a deeper look at it. I just don't know who that would be.
Yeah, if you want to watch that full interview, it's up now for subscribers on Patreon Locals and on X, UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. He was very blunt. I mean, he's always been someone who speaks his mind, but certainly when it comes to, you know, a sitting sheriff speaking out against the current attorney general, who very well could be the next governor of Washington, man, he didn't hold anything back. I mean, calling him a bully who has used the power of his office to ruin people's lives. I mean, it certainly is aligned with how I feel about Bob Ferguson. It is not a surprise that Sheriff Troyer feels that way, given what he's been through personally. But I agree with him at the end there. I mean, four unsuccessful political prosecutions in a short period of time against police officers, I do think it's something that people need to look into. Were these cases that were brought purely for political purposes? I mean, this is a guy who brags a lot about his winning record in suing the Trump administration. You don't see him out there talking about his losing record in suing police officers. So, man, if you have not become a subscriber yet, that is an interview absolutely worth listening to. We also had on the Centralia police chief on the show on Sunday to talk about what's happening with Green Hill School, the juvenile facility that's been having a ton of issues down there in that area. So, all right, got to start with an education story today. Man, we worry. We talk about the test scores all the time. Do I believe a test score that you take in high school is an indication of what your success level is going to be in life? No, I don't. Do I believe, though, that being able to, as a student, and being expected to live up to a certain set of standards in order to graduate teaches kids important lessons? Yes, I do. Having structure, having rules, having bars that are set for learning is important for kids. And in this state, it's so funny because the test scores are terrible. I mean, we looked at the latest ones. Only 50% of students statewide are meeting ELA standards. 39% are meeting math standards. 43% are meeting science standards. Only 67% of kids are regularly attending school. Meanwhile, we're spending $17,000 per pupil. I mean, it's pretty ridiculous stuff. And whenever you point to those test scores, you know, the superintendent of public instruction will say that, oh, test scores aren't the end-all be-all. But does anyone really believe that if test scores were really high, that he wouldn't be bragging about test scores? Even I think he admitted that last time he was on the show. Like, you want to dismiss test scores when they're not good as not a good indicator of how kids are doing. But man, if those test scores were through the roof, absolutely, he'd be bragging about them. So you got test scores that are really low. And meanwhile, what do you have teachers focused on? This is why I share the belief with our late friend Dory Monson that the Washington Education Association is the most powerful entity in the state of Washington and controls a lot of what lawmakers do in Olympia. We talked earlier on this month about, you know, during this critical time, test scores are low. Kids are still recovering from being out of classes during the pandemic. And you've got WEA, by state law, offering teachers this month and next month training courses such as culturally responsive art instruction, equity literacy, culturally responsive classroom management, awareness of current institutional inequities, diversity, equity, and cultural competence in classroom instruction, intro to cultural identity and diversity. Just a few of the training classes that teachers are going to be focused on during the first few months of this year, thanks to a state law that was passed a couple years ago that mandates DEI training for teachers and staff. Is it any wonder that test scores are down? Now, meanwhile, what's new is we found out that coming up on February 2nd, the leadership of the WEA is going to be having a little summit. What do you think? Is their summit going to be about how can we better teach kids? How can we be better role models for kids? How can we focus on the basics of education? No, of course not. It's going to be a drag queen performance. Is there any surprise in the world? It says Friday 2-2 will be an evening in person at the Puget Sound Skills Center, and it's going to feature drag queen story hour from Sylvia Stay for More. I do love a good drag queen name. Now listen, I love a drag show. I've been to many, many drag shows, really all over the world. I've been to some in Seattle. I blame my friend Johnny. Wherever we are, he takes me to a drag show. Tokyo, back in the day when he was serving in the military. New York, last time I was there to visit him. So I am not opposed to drag shows. Love them. I am also an adult. And I also can focus on my job and also go to drag shows in my free time. But when you are the Washington Education Association and test scores are in the toilet and you're using your time and your resources to watch a drag performance, I would argue that you are not able to do both at once. Let's see what we looked online for Sylvia O'Stayfermore to see what kind of drag queen Sylvia might be. You got a clip for us, Nicole? Nothing like
this is one that you know, actually has some dancers behind her and stuff, but most of her shows seem to be for an elderly community in West Seattle.
Oh, there's a little bit of scantily clad Navy men behind her. Just getting their little dance on. I mean, I can see how that obviously, you know, teaches these teachers a lot about just quality quality education. You laugh so you don't cry, which is 90% of Undivided is really us all laughing together so we don't break down in tears and just completely give up. I mean, this is ridiculous. It also, if you go to the link that the flyer sends you to, it says that the event is going to feature Helena Lourdes Donato Sapp, who is a young activist keynote speaker, child activist. I mean, that also is very much in keeping with the goal of the Washington Education Association to teach children how to be activists. And look, I like a kid who is a good public speaker. I think that's a good skill, teaching a child public speaking. You know, more power to you. Helena, when I was young, I used to do all sorts of public speaking. Maybe that's where I found why I found myself where I am right now. So I actually don't knock the kid for being a good public speaker, being invited to speak at these events. But I've listened to a couple of her things, and I mean, there definitely is kind of a social justice activism bend. And I also don't think that it speaks a whole lot to what teachers should be learning about, which is trying to get back to the basics. It was also just interesting because this is one of the stories we were going to do on Thursday's show, but we had to push back to today because we had so much on Thursday. And it just so happened that just as we were getting ready to come on the air today, Nicole got an email from a listener of ours who's a substitute teacher who says WEA is currently reaching out to subs and offering them some training classes. And here's what this particular substitute teacher got sent this morning. So it says, Emergency Substitute Teacher Project Professional Development. Oh, that's great. You're going to give subs some opportunities for professional development as well? That's awesome. You probably should be doing that. Let's see what kind of professional development they're offering. Social emotional learning and education. Understanding cultural differences to reduce trauma. Okay. Gender identity and intersectionality. Understanding cultural differences to reduce trauma. Successful inclusion and so the same. So they're like, hey, this is the crap we're pushing on our full-time teachers by state law, so we can't leave our subs out, because God forbid one of our full-time activist teachers has to take a few weeks off, and then we get in a substitute teacher who actually wants to teach the kids reading, writing, and arithmetic. We cannot have that. So we need to make sure that the subs are fully also indoctrinated in what WEA wants our education system to look like. Freaking absurd. And man, I won't say who it is, because it might be easy to figure it out, but I go to a particular workout class and I was talking to someone in there who was just like, I cannot believe some of the stuff that you guys have been highlighting on your show. Like, and that's the thing is, I have never had a conversation in the real world, off the internet. I've never had a conversation where someone has defended stuff like this, ever. And I have friends across the ideological spectrum who are parents, not parents. I have friends who are teachers. I have never heard this stuff defended or justified. The only place I see it defended and justified are in things sent out by the WEA and when nameless, faceless people on social media are saying, this is a great thing. And that tells you a lot. You find someone who's willing to put their name and their face on justifying this kind of stuff. And I will tell you, it's very hard to come by. And there's a reason.
We did hear, we didn't include this today, but we did hear back from the Mar Vista.
It's because I have some follow-up work I'm doing. Okay. But we can say it generally.
I will say they came back and just said, hey, none of the actual parents from that class complained when we read them A for Activists.
Yeah.
And which is a problem. It just goes to show you have to speak up. It's going to be hard, but you have to do it.
Yeah. So I'm going to have a follow-up on that story tomorrow. But remember last week, we've had two stories this month involving Mar Vista Elementary and the Highline School District. And completely inappropriate books that kids are being read to kids. One was called A for Activist, and it talked about celebrating violent political movements and protest and calling people who don't use solar power like sucking silly
Dinosaur sledge.
Dinosaur sledge sucking somethings. Crazy stuff.
Boo, hiss.
And we reached out to the district, and they basically defended it and then said, well, none of the parents complained. Well, obviously parents don't like it because they're sending it to us and they're sending it to other members of the media. But I agree, parents need to complain.
Yep.
If you don't complain, it means way more if you complain than if you complain through us and then you never make your complaints known. And I get it that you're concerned about whatever sort of pushback that you might have. But I promise you, based on what I just said, I know that you do this too. You go out in the community, you talk to fellow parents. I know for a fact that no parent you've spoken to like agrees with this. So you got to say something. It can't just be us. I mean, we have a platform. We're going to do it. We're going to fight the good fight. We need you to fight the good fight with us. And we need you to fight the good fight in the trenches where these fights need to be fought. That was like a Dr. Seuss book. Wow. I am on it today. Okay. Coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, SNL could not write a better script or a worse script, rather, than the script that is currently being acted out in the legislature in Olympia. But first, our friend Wes Jones joined us to give a little prediction about what's going to be happening in the housing market in 2024.
Well, my expectation is that rates are going to come down. The Fed is telling us they are going to. It is an election year. I would have expected that to happen, even if the Fed wasn't talking about it. And if it wasn't interest rates, it'd be something else. It'd be tax credits, first-time tax credits, something, you know, something else. Some other type of incentive to spark housing because, you know, come November, they're going to want people feeling good about the economy. And, you know, I listened to, you know, Zach Abraham, you know, one of your other guys, really smart dude. And, you know, he has concerns about the economy, you know, that are not going to be controllable. But what can you control? You can control housing to a certain degree. And if they can put pressure down on interest rates, allow more transactions to happen, it's going to make people feel better.
Yeah. And, you know, there's some disagreement about whether the Fed is actually going to follow through on the interest rate cuts that it has forecasted. But if it does, that is going to be a good opportunity for home sellers. And the best thing you can do is be ready. So even if you're kind of waiting for those the Fed cuts to manifest, or you're sort of waiting until the spring or summer housing market, reach out to Wes Jones today to get the process started. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. He's going to take a look at your property. He's going to give you a free market analysis. You can talk about their listing boost concierge service, which goes through and makes necessary changes to your house that they might even help pay for up front. Sellwithwes.com. Start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Would you want Gary Ridgway to be serving on your jury if you were charged with a crime? I am sure the answer is no. But if Democrats in Olympia have their way, that very much could be the case. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop, not even SNL, not even the Babylon Bee could write a headline as absurd as what's playing out in Olympia right now. I mean, we have reached well beyond parody levels. When you talk about criminal justice reform and activism, you know, there have been bills throughout the years where I was like, okay, that's too far, but at least I understood the sentiment behind it. And then there is House Bill 2030, which is so absurd that I genuinely can't believe that we're sitting here and having this actual conversation. Now, House Bill 2030 is sponsored by Representative Tara Simmons, which will not come as a surprise. I mean, I could have told you what the bill was, and 99% of you would have said, I bet you Tara Simmons is the sponsor of this bill, because she used to be incarcerated, and so a lot of the bills that she puts forth have to do with making life easier for felons. Some of them are fine. I want people to get out of prison and to be able to lead a productive life. What I don't want is to reduce consequences so much that you're allowing anyone, as this bill would, incarcerated in the state of Washington to have their right back to vote and to be able to serve on a jury of your peers. And that is what would happen under House Bill 2030. There's at least one caveat, which we'll get to momentarily. But there was a committee hearing on this last week. Let's listen to what Representative Tara Simmons said she spoke in front of the committee because it is her bill. So that's how it works. If you're a lawmaker and you're sponsoring a bill and it's before a particular committee, you're going to show up and you're going to pitch it. You're going to tell them why you think this bill is important. So here is Representative Simmons.
You know, here in America, we take away the right to vote, and it's very much rooted in racism and our, very shameful past with racism. And other countries don't take away your right to vote. The actual incarceration, and what I learned in Norway, is the way they believe is that people are in prison and that is the punishment. They get their punishment at the court and they are there to learn to be better neighbors. The reason why I think we take it away is because we believe that people that are incarcerated are bad people.
Correct.
And I think it's a moral issue. We not only incarcerate them, we take away the right to vote, we give them fines and fees, we don't really give them adequate health care, food, you know, all of these other ways we punish people. When you overpunish, people leave prison feeling low self-worth and are not productive. I think voting is one thing. There's no public safety risk in it. They're not going to use their ballot to commit a crime. You know, they're not going to use their ballot to hold somebody up or anything like that.
I try to undivided, Brandy. Undivided. Look, I understand the sentiment that we want to make sure the vast majority of people who are incarcerated in the state of Washington are going to get out someday. That's a fact. And you want to make sure that when they get out, they have gone through the necessary rehabilitation while behind bars so they don't do it again. That's a societal good. I 100% agree with that. But I disagree with the notion that when they commit a serious crime and they're put in prison, that we need to make life comfortable for them, that they should have all of the rights and the freedoms that they otherwise would have if they weren't incarcerated. That's ridiculous. It is supposed to be a punishment. And it is a punishment to have your right to vote taken away from you for a period of time until you prove that you can respect the rules of a civil society and of a free society. And when you're behind bars because you killed someone, for instance, you've taken away that person's right to vote forever. You've taken away their dignity and their self-worth when you're in prison for rape, when you're in prison for murder, when you're in prison for an armed robbery. And that's the conversation that people like Representative Tara Simmons are never willing to have, is to have a conversation about the things that were taken away from crime victims. You want to have a conversation about giving things back to criminals. And I also argue with the notion, and this is true for those of us who are free and who are not incarcerated, I disagree entirely with the notion that it's the government's job to give you self-worth, to give you self-determination, to give you a will to live. That's not the government's job, and God forbid we ever start to believe that that's the government's job. To make me believe that my life is worth living? That's not the job of the government. It's not the job of our prison system either. So there are a couple very clear issues with this bill. Not that I need to explain them to you, but I will. So Representative Greg Cheney, a Republican of Battleground, who was on the committee that was hearing this bill, had a legitimate question, line of questioning for Representative Tara Simmons about what this would mean for people who are on trial for crimes that a member of their jury under this bill might also have committed.
For vehicular homicide, for vehicular assault, they can all sit on a juror panel on a DUI charge, correct?
Well, I think that's the current case if people are in jail, too.
If they are, no, you can be in jail. Follow up. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
You can be in jail, and I know you know this, you can be in jail on a misdemeanor. That is very different than being in a prison on a felony. Mm-hmm. If you are in prison on a felony for DUI assault, this bill would let you come into a misdemeanor court and sit on a DUI jury panel, correct?
I would say people in jail are there for felony DUIs and vehicular assaults as well, and they can currently vote. So yes, this would allow them, if they move to the prison, to vote as well.
Yeah, but typically when you look at the difference between jail time and prison time, usually you're in jail if your sentence is less than 364 days, and then you go to prison if it's more serious and if it's over a year. So to compare those things and to just look on paper and say, well, technically their crime is exactly the same, and so then if they're in jail or if they're in prison, it makes no difference. It does make a difference, because you could also have committed a crime that you're in jail for, that somebody's in jail for and the other person's in prison for, because the other person has a higher offender score because they've committed a lot of other crimes before that that has raised their offender score and has thus increased their sentence. And she knows that. Just like Representative Cheney said, she knows that because she's been in prison and because she has dedicated her life to looking at these sorts of issues. She is very aware of the differences that leave someone in jail versus leave someone in prison. And to sit there and act as if she does not know or to twist the truth is an absolute failure. And I'm glad that Representative Cheney called her out. But here is the piece de resistance. And this is what brings a bill like this from the level of just being another ridiculous attempt at activism as a legislator to being, I mean, again, to the level of parody that I just never even thought we would be here. Representative Sam Lowe had a very important follow-up question for Representative Tara Simmons.
I disagree with your premise of racism. When I heard this bill and read this bill, I thought of one person, Gary Ridgway, and I've thought of that person every day since I read this bill. I've not thought about any other prisoner other than Gary Ridgway. So would Gary Ridgway's rights be restored with this bill?
Yes, they would. And well, yeah, because he wasn't punished by death, right? Or he was, but it got commuted. So I think his right might be restored.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Peak insanity. Peak insanity. And credit to Sam Lowe for making her acknowledge it, sitting there on the record, on video. Yes, this bill would give one of the worst serial killers in American history the power and the right to vote. Or even worse yet, the right to sit on a jury and decide your fate. That's about as crazy as it gets. That's about as crazy a bill as I have ever seen in 15 years introduced in Olympia. But there's multiple sponsors on this bill. It's not just Representative Tara Simmons, who's out there pushing crazy pro-prisoner stuff on an island. Several of the bills of hers that we've talked about this legislative session have many other co-sponsors, Democrats, obviously. This one has Representative Gregerson, Bateman, Ormsby, Peterson, Mena, Street, and Dolia. So we can put the bulk of the blame on Representative Simmons for the kind of stuff that she comes up with. And she can say, well, you know, you can use Gary Ridgway as an extreme example. And there are a lot of people who aren't Gary Ridgway incarcerated in our prison system. And that's true. But there are a lot of people who killed someone who have no right in the world being considered. And how would that even work? How would that, besides the utter stupidity of it and the extremism of it, how would that even work? How have you ever, I'm assuming Tara Simmons, you have, sat through the jury selection process? Well, I have. And as a citizen, you are called to come to a courthouse. If it's a big trial, there's about 100 of you, and you sit there and you go through questioning. Can you imagine sitting there? You get your jury summons in the mail and you go into a courtroom. And then what? They bring Gary Ridgway in his orange jumpsuit and handcuffs and sit him next to you to answer questions from the prosecution to decide whether he's going to be on a jury? And then what if he's chosen, God forbid, which I don't actually think would happen. And then you're sitting in a box with 12 people. They're going to let Gary Ridgway sit next to you. They're going to let a murderer sit next to you, a rapist sit next to you. And they're going to keep him in handcuffs during someone else's trial? Probably not. So they're going to take the handcuffs off? Of course not. This doesn't even work in practice. These are the people who are in Olympia making the laws that you and I have to live by. And that you and I have to live with the consequences of. I don't think I've ever seen a dumber, more dangerous bill in my life. Gosh, there's a new one every week that absolutely reaches that threshold. I asked subscribers in our daily show poll today, because again, I think there is some good conversations to have about how you set up an inmate to succeed on the outside after they're released from prison. I asked, do you think inmates should be able to vote and serve on a jury? And I gave you two options. Yes, but only nonviolent offenders Or no, if you're in prison, no, you can't serve on a jury. I mean, not to mention that again, I just don't know how that would be functional. Like, you're going to take them from the prison that they're in and bus them to the courthouse. I just don't make any sense. The vast majority of you are saying no, which is not a surprise. Carenza says, I would agree. It just seems that when you think you're giving them an inch, some scenario comes up that you would not agree with, but fits within the rules. Jackie says, when you break the law, you forfeit some of your rights. It's a consequence of breaking the law and being found guilty. If you don't want to lose those rights, then don't break the law. The most stupid bill I have ever heard of. And there are a lot of good contenders. Jackie and I were on the same wavelength. Kendrick says, I just have to ask, is this the most important thing they need to be worried about? This is really the highest priority. And that is such a good point, because this is a 60-day legislative session. It's a short session. And you think of all the other things that we have going on, and you're holding. And I'd also point out, there's a lot of bills that never get a hearing. There's a lot of bills that are sponsored that go out and they get dropped and they never get a hearing. So not only was this bill created, which I think was mistake number one, but he was given a hearing.
Oh, and did you also catch?
Which is mistake number two.
Did you catch that they also got to go on a taxpayer-funded trip to Norway?
Did she actually go to Norway?
Yes.
To go to the prison system?
With other legislators.
Nicole, mm-hmm. You love traveling. Maybe the key to being able to travel as part of your job is, and not even pay for it, is just becoming a state lawmaker.
There we go.
There we go. Let me see here. Oh, that's funny. Travis Eberle wrote on Patreon, because the poll didn't have the name of the sponsor, he goes, let me guess, this is the handiwork of Tara Simmons. Yeah, hard pass, he says. And I will note, because Tara Simmons sort of referred to it, the only exception is someone who's sentenced to death. But remember, we don't give people the death penalty in this state anymore. So the only exception is not an exception at all.
Well, that's why Ridgeway can get in, because we've taken those off the
table. Well, he wasn't given the death penalty anyway, was he?
Oh, I believe so. And then
he was.
And then
they commuted it.
Yep.
Because of that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There was one of the serial killers where they weren't given the death penalty because they agreed to, like, take them to some bodies. And maybe it wasn't Ridgeway then.
I don't think.
This is crazy stuff.
You're wrong.
99.99999999999% of Washingtonians understand that this is crazy stuff. Yet it gets to the point where it's having a hearing in Olympia. Well, how do we get here?
And if you're in jail for life, you don't need to be voting on stuff. Lot of the argument is that he wouldn't actually get, they'd be dismissed from the jury, blah, blah, blah. They'd get whatever. But the right to vote is key. They would definitely be able to vote given this bill. And that's just ridiculous. They're in jail for life. They're not going to get out and actually take part in the system that we're voting for.
And if you're not in jail for life, then remember, this has been a slow drip to this crazy point. They have already had laws to help restore some of the rights of convicted felons to vote when they get out of prison. So this is a slow drip, and it's like, okay, so we're doing this. And then you're just basically saying, I mean, you're trying to get to the point where if you are imprisoned, that's the only difference.
Yeah, like, we're just going to house you.
You were just going to house you for free and feed you for free. Or not even that, like, oh, you want to, the next bill, here it is. You guys, please send me what you think the next bill will be next year, and hyperbole is more than welcome. The next bill will be allowing Uber Eats drivers to deliver to state penitentiaries. Because you can't have them.
That's probably
it. Oh, did I just give her an idea? Good. That's what it'll be. It'll be, the only difference is we're housing you. Everything else you could do on the outside, have visits, let your wife and kids come stay with you, not even a conjugal visit, like, they can come live in the prison too.
Right.
Right? You can go out, you can go to movies, we'll have this in, we'll have that in, you can get Uber Eats delivered. I mean, that's where we're going to, right? If you don't think that they should have punishments beyond their actual sentence of incarceration. Look, if you're going to let Gary Ridgway serve on a jury, then nothing is off limits. Genuinely. Nothing is off limits. Okay, I have been talking about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan, and Nicole, I'm working toward it. I told you that I was going to lose 15 more pounds, and I'm going to post a bikini picture in March.
Okay.
Why do you think I wouldn't do that?
Because you're a classy lady.
Well, it'll be a classy bikini. It's not going to be like string. First of all, I'll never have the body. I'm just not built that way to have a string bikini hold things in place.
You don't even like your shoulders showing and things, but you're going to post a bikini pic?
Listen, everyone needs a goal to work toward, okay? This is my goal. And it's very doable in the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. You see what I did there? I was at an event this weekend. I was speaking to the Master Builders. There was five of us there who were on the Eastside program because of the show, obviously. And I was like, that is so random, because that's not even like I was going to some podcast event that was people who always listen and like shop with our sponsors and stuff. No, it was a master builders thing. Five people.
Good.
I was like, man, love it. Love to see it. And they were feeling great and looking great too. So I'm down 37 pounds on the program, about to be much more with my bikini picture forthcoming. If you have been thinking about it, look, I think, you know, one of my issues is I've always found it hard to lose weight, and I've done a lot of up and down dieting. So most of the fad diets that I've tried, like, I'll be on them for a couple months and then I completely give up. I've been on Eastside now and in maintenance for more than a year. And so that really is the difference here. I mean, you can do drugs or injections, and then what happens when you stop taking them? And so I think if you really want to commit to learning to eat the right food in the right portions and then having that tool always in your pocket to be able to find success, Eastside Weight Loss Clinic is really, truly a good program. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Start by scheduling a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. All right. There has been another implosion within the failing homeless industrial complex. Let's talk about it. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. And a big thank you to Future 42 for sponsoring our new Friday show, Politics Unpacked. We sure do appreciate it. Okay, we talked on the show last year during the last implosion that there was around the homeless industrial complex about the end of Partnership for Zero. So Partnership for Zero, when this was pitched to the public, this was truly pitched as this is going to solve everything. This is going to be a public-private partnership. Everyone's going to come together. They're going to donate money. And this is going to, what was their promise? It would lead to effectively zero homeless people in downtown Seattle in just the course of a year. I mean, some of the headlines, big givers launch $10 million partnership for zero to dramatically reduce unsheltered homelessness in downtown Seattle. That was in 2022, February 17th, 2022. Did that happen? Of course it didn't happen. And we're no better off today in January of 2024 than we were when Partnership for Zero started. So it ended up imploding despite the fact that there were heavy hitters in the private sector who were donating to Partnership for Zero. And they came out and they were so proud of it. And I'll get to more of that in a moment. But Partnership for Zero had donors from Alaska Airlines, Amazon, the Bulmer Group, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Boeing, Costco, Expedia. I mean, the who's who, Nordstrom, the who's who of businesses with money in Seattle and Washington State bought into this program. And it was part of the King County Regional Homelessness Authority and under the umbrella of something called We Are In. So you had King County Regional Homelessness Authority, We Are In, Partnership for Zero was under that umbrella. Well, so when Partnership for Zero imploded last year, and there was all sorts of, you know, accusations of money mismanagement, this was the update. This came out in September of 2023. Because you remember the head of the King County Regional Homelessness Authority, Mark Doans, resigned and, you know, resigned under accusations that the authority was a failure, that it was just spending a bunch of money on salaries, that nothing was getting done. So this was the announcement when Partnership for Zero closed. Since the departure of the Regional Homelessness Authority's first CEO, the agency has been conducting a full assessment of operations. This work includes a review of our governance structure and a close look at our operations and programs, including Partnership for Zero. Initial funding for the pilot program has now expired. In addition, KCRHA and partners recognize that the need for unsheltered services in downtown Seattle and the Chinatown International District is greater than the capacity the Partnership for Zero pilot program had. Blah, blah, blah. So we're winding down Partnership for Zero. So that led everybody to kind of wonder, okay, well, so you had the King County Regional Homeless Authority, and then you had Partnership for Zero down here, but above that was something called We Are In. So that was sort of the umbrella group that was in charge of Partnership for Zero. Well, now it appears that We Are In has imploded as well, which is not a particular surprise given the fact that Partnership for Zero imploded. Here is the headline from Publicola: We Are In, public-private partnership behind Partnership for Zero, fires staff amid calls for an investigation. And so here you have, and I think one of the fundamental issues here is you staffed some of these entities with people based on their lived experience, which in the concept isn't so bad. Where if we want to end homelessness and help people who are homeless, maybe it would help to have some people who have been there. But when you make that such a priority and you look at lived experience hiring, not based on experience, not based on their ability to actually run an entity with millions of dollars coming in. And that is your first and foremost goal when you look to hire someone. It's really not a surprise that it would crumble and that all the money would be wasted. I mean, when Partnership for Zero folded, by the time that it happened, again, a program that promised to effectively end homelessness in downtown Seattle, they spent all that money from all those big corporate donors. They got just 230 people into housing. Okay? So now we are in folds. More from Publicola. WeRN's apparent implosion, which has not been previously reported, leaves the future of WeRN, as well as the role of philanthropic donors like the Rakes and Gates Foundations, leaves that open to what role they'll play addressing homelessness in doubt. If WeRN collapses, it will have ramifications beyond the organization itself. Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell, who has been less than enthusiastic about the King County Regional Homelessness Authority's past requests for large budget increases, had said solving homelessness must include successful public-private partnerships between private donors and local governments. If those private donors are throwing up their hands on homelessness, it could bode poorly for the future of the King County Regional Homelessness Authority. Here's the thing, and this is from Publicola, which is a far left news blog, and I'm not saying the reporting is not good on it, and they broke this news about WeRN firing its staff and calls for an investigation, which is obviously leading up to them just folding entirely. But that last line, if those private donors are throwing up their hands on homelessness, it could bode poorly for the future of the King County Regional Homelessness Authority. It frames it as if these private donors are giving up on something that's working or are giving up on solving homelessness altogether. No, these are businesses, and you don't become a successful business when you throw money at things that are failing. That's the difference between the government and the private sector. There is only so much waste that the private sector is willing to tolerate. There's a lot of waste the government, obviously, is willing to tolerate when it comes to spending on homelessness. Every year, the homeless crisis gets worse and the government spends more money. We talked about Governor Inslee's right-of-way initiative, where he's clearing encampments out from along state highways that costs $1 million almost per person to get them out of homelessness. Do you think that kind of ROI would ever be tolerated in the private sector? No. And they shouldn't have to tolerate it. There is no reason that some of these successful Northwest companies who initially jumped onto this have to keep donating millions of dollars only for it to be squandered by government bureaucrats and people with lived experience who have no experience running an entity like that. And so the money doesn't go to actually help people. So what, Partnership for Zero, WeRN, the King County Regional Homelessness Authority, what they're starting to realize is that when you don't deliver on what you promise, people who are good stewards of their own money are not going to invest in you because they're not getting any outcome for that investment. So I'll go back to that line on Publicola. If those private donors are throwing up their hands on homelessness, it could bode poorly for the future of the King County Regional Homelessness Authority. They're not throwing up their hands on solving homelessness. They're throwing up their hands on dumping money into a solution that isn't working. And that's what the government ought to do as well. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter. All right, I just want to tease an interview. So as we enter the 2024 election cycle, we'll be doing a lot of interviews with candidates, and we want to make sure that you are able to view the whole interviews. And so we'll be putting them up on Patreon and Locals and on X. You can make sure to meet and learn more about some of the candidates for public office. So the 6th Congressional District is going to be really interesting in 2024 because the incumbent isn't running. Derek Kilmer, the congressman from the 6th, opted not to run for re-election. One of his reasons that he gave was that he has small kids, and so maybe that back and forth to D.C. And I like Derek Kilmer. I think as a Democrat, he's been very reasonable. He's come on this show before. And so of all the Democratic members of Congress from our state who I wish wouldn't run for re-election, he wasn't at the top of my list, but he's not. So there are three major candidates who are in. State Senator Emily Randall, who's far left progressive. And then on the Democratic side, you also have Hillary Franz, who you remember, she's the commissioner of public lands, but she was running for governor. And then this opened up and she dropped out. Now she's running for the sixth. And then you have State Senator Drew McEwen, who is a Republican and currently represents a part of what would be the sixth congressional district if he wins the race. So Congressman Drew McEwen came on the show. We posted this full interview, by the way. If you go to Patreon or Locals right now, it is up. And he talked a little bit about who he is and his campaign.
Got elected to the state house in 2012 when I ran. I was told there's no way you can win. A Republican hadn't held that house seat since 1932. And we won in November of 2012. Went on to serve for 10 years in the House and then got elected to the Senate this past election cycle. Again, a Republican hadn't held that seat since the 1950s. And granted, Tim Sheldon, my predecessor, caucused with the Republicans, but he did run as a Democrat and won as a Democrat. So, We've flipped the 35th district. I've served in the minority the entire time I've been in the legislature, and I'll tell you what, that's given me a keen view on how you really do have to work. Everybody talks about working across the aisle, but I'll tell you what, when you look at some of the people that have been more recently elected to the legislature and are in the majority, they have no clue what it really means to have to work across the aisle. And that is something I've prided myself on, and in bringing back infrastructure dollars to my district, and really having a voice for those who felt left behind over the years. And I'll do the same thing for the 6th Congressional District. It's very similar to my legislative district, and I look forward to representing the people on the at the federal level.
And I actually thought that was an interesting point he made. We discussed more in the full interview if you want to go watch it. It's not behind a paywall, so anyone can watch our interviews with the candidates. You just got to head over to Patreon or Locals. That whole concept of having to work in the minority party and being forced in a way to seek consensus because you can't do things on an island. And Democrats don't have to deal with that. In this state, if they want to pass something, even letting Gary Ridgway serve on a jury, like, they'll pass it. And so I do think that that gives Republicans an interesting perspective on what that's like and how much more difficult it is to get your policy through. So we appreciate Senator Drew McEwen coming on to talk about his bid for Congress. We've also invited Hillary Franz on. Any update on that? She and I used to be like this, man. I'd have her on Fox all the time. But it's like, oh, now we're this scary podcast that isn't so kind to people of her party. And she doesn't want to come on or what? Rude, Hillary. I'll be in touch.
I think it's the candidate part of it, I've heard. She just doesn't want to tick her people off.
Oh, well. I'll say, though, the 6th Congressional District, although it is held by a Democrat right now, it's a very blue-collar, working-class district. Those are our people. Those are our people. And I know that from my time at Fox 13. So the idea that, a Democrat in Kitsap County is not a Democrat in Seattle. Mm-hmm. That's a very different type of Democrat. So, yeah, I do think you ought to come on and talk to them. And also, she needs to answer for the fact that she lives in Seattle. She lives in Magnolia, and she has ties to the 6th Congressional District out on the coast. I think she has a vacation house out there. She used to serve on the Bainbridge Island City Council, but she doesn't anymore. Mm-hmm. So that is something that particularly that district, which again, you have a lot of blue-collar industries and all that, I don't know how kindly they're going to take to somebody from Seattle who wants to represent them in Congress. So come on, Hill. Can I call her Hill? I don't know.
Sure.
But Senator Emily Randall, I'm not sure she's invited. Is that okay? We get to pick and choose who we have in our podcast. We don't platform extremists. We just don't.
No.
And I think there's a reason for that. And one of the reasons we do this podcast is because, you know, you look at the mainstream media and they're given the crazy extremes a platform to come and spew their nonsense. We might talk about extremist ideas like we have on the show today, but we're going to push back against them. And I'm sorry, am I going to give an extremist 40 minutes of airtime?
If you could make her look silly.
Well, Nicole, I wouldn't ever intentionally make someone look silly. No, I think that there are some lawmakers who just by speaking make themselves look silly. But anyway, and it's going to be a race between Drew and Hillary anyway. Okay, but if you disagree with my sentiment, I'd like to hear it. If you think I should invite, I mean, she's not going to come on the show, but if you think I should invite Senator Emily Randall on the show, let me know. I mean, I'm not opposed to it. I just don't think she has a chance to win. Anyway, firstmarkinsurance.com. Nicole, do you have the email? Will you pull up the email from the listener? Because I'll get to it in a second. But I love to hear success stories with our sponsors. Everyone needs insurance. So why would you not have your insurance handled for free by a local company that's been in the business for decades at, like I said, no cost, who can shop the market for you, help you navigate what is a really difficult insurance market right now, especially if you've got a claim to file. FirstMarkInsurance.com. Mike and I are proud members of the FirstMark family. In fact, I just had to get a new car, And I was like, Mike's like, hey, you got to call First Mark. Isn't that cute? Mike's like, you got to call First Mark on Monday. You got to let him know you got a new car. because we really do feel like it's like having, you know, a friend handle our insurance. Dave Taylor is the CEO of First Mark. And he says right now is particularly a good time to have an insurance broker because, one, the crime issue. And insurance companies are looking to shed customers who are even the slightest bit of a risk to them.
We could have a client come to us today that maybe just had a comp loss. So like a windshield loss,
sure,
right? Just a little ding in your windshield. And they come in and we don't have a carrier that will take them.
For a ding in their windshield.
Right? For a ding in the windshield, right? And this is changing, right? So we have some carriers that are starting to loosen up already, but it's just, I'm just saying there's never been a better time to be a broker because you need multiple carriers to find solutions for your clients these days. You can't just have one carrier because they might not want your client.
Yeah, so if you get dropped from an insurance company, First Mark is going to go out and they're going to call the carriers for you and they're going to get you, work hard to get you coverage. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. You need insurance anyway. You can save money in the process. Like Mike and I got better insurance for the same price. It was an absolute no-brainer. Firstmarkinsurance.com. Nicole, you got a nice email from a listener?
I did.
What does it say?
It's from listener Jean, and it says, I hope you're having a great start to the new year. I just wanted to thank you for your advertising because I'm saving money on my insurance now and losing weight with Eastside. I just finished my first week and I'm down 6.5 pounds.
Oh, you love that. Saving money, losing weight. 2024 is Jean's year. I love it.
You know, I actually talked to two people this weekend that were both told from their insurance company that they can no longer insure them. One made a windshield claim and one has a Kia.
Yeah. And it's about navigating that market. Like sometimes you just have to file a claim and that just is what it is. Not everyone can pay out of pocket for everything to avoid being dropped by their insurance carrier. But then on the back end, not to have someone on your team who's going to help you like figure out, well, what do I do now? You know, I've been dropped.
And make sure when you get that notice, you call them right away because you have that gap in coverage and you're in trouble. So call them right away.
Can't have that. All right, let's get to national news. DeSantis is gone. It's just shocking how this race, the whole landscape of the presidential race, changed when they decided to continue to pursue prosecutions against Trump because it lionized him. And you had people who I think were really ready to move on to someone like DeSantis. And then, man, when the Democrats and when these institutions continued to go after Trump, it was like, well, no, now it's almost like supporting him to spite them. And so, gosh, it's just fascinating to watch now, like how DeSantis, after that happened, just down to the point where he's like, I got to go. Now, I thought he released a classy video that might be saving face if he hopes to run for president in 2028 or something, but he endorsed Donald Trump.
If there was anything I could do to produce a favorable outcome, more campaign stops, more interviews, I would do it. But I can't ask our supporters to volunteer their time and donate their resources if we don't have a clear path to victory. Accordingly, I am today suspending my campaign. I'm proud to have delivered on 100% of my promises, and I will not stop now. It's clear to me that a majority of Republican primary voters want to give Donald Trump another chance. They watch his presidency get stymied by relentless resistance, and they see Democrats using lawfare this day to attack him. Well, I've had disagreements with Donald Trump, such as on the coronavirus pandemic and his elevation of Anthony Fauci. Trump is superior to the current incumbent, Joe Biden. That is clear. I signed a pledge to support the Republican nominee, and I will honor that pledge. He has my endorsement because we can't go back to the old Republican guard of yesteryear, a repackaged form of warmed-over corporatism that Nikki Haley represents. The days of putting Americans last, of kowtowing to large corporations, of caving to woke ideology are over.
I love how he's still got a little singer in where he's like, this guy's been at my throat for the last few months, so I'm going to bring back Anthony Fauci. Also, you know, there's an encouragement now for Nikki Haley to get out. I will say, because this is always as it is, you know, Trump is really harsh on people who challenge him, as he was for Ron DeSanctimonious. And now he says that he'll stop using that phrase.
Will I be using the name Ron DeSanctimonious? I said, that name is officially retired.
Here we are. So anyway, Nikki Haley, they're in New Hampshire now, and so she's certainly still sticking in it. Even though, you know, DeSantis, I think part of that is he's probably correct in saying that there isn't a path to victory for him, but he also doesn't want to completely alienate Trump's base in case he decides to run again. So I don't know how much longer Nikki Haley is going to stick in there. I prefer Nikki Haley to Donald Trump. But I also don't think there's a path to victory for her. And she's started to pull out some cards that I thought Republicans didn't pull out, like the race card.
We were the only Indian family in our small southern town. I was teased every day for being brown.
No, you weren't.
Saying that I had black friends is a source of pride. Saying that I had white friends is a source of pride. If you want to know what it was like growing up, I was disqualified from a beauty pageant because I wasn't white or black, because they didn't know where to put me. So look, I know the hardships, the pain that come with racism.
I hate to say that she's lying, but she just looks white.
Right. And that was in the 80s. Were we still segregating pageants?
Yeah,
I think it was somebody brought that up on Twitter, but no, there wasn't. You're disqualified if you're not one or the other.
Prove it.
Mm-hmm.
Prove it. But it also bothers me because, like, you're supposed to be. I mean, I do want a candidate who, whether they are on the right or the left or somewhere in between, I want them to be firmly against identitarianism and this obsession with race, because I do think that's really detrimental to the country. So I don't like to see her sort of playing that card. She was also playing the woman card on the campaign trail in New Hampshire, which. Now, do I believe that having a woman on the ticket for presidency for Republicans would be beneficial? Yes, I think it would help convince some suburban women voters that the abortion issue maybe isn't something that they should be hyper-focused on, that you don't have someone who's going to be anti-woman or whatever it is. But do I think someone should be elected president because of their gender? No. So I think she's a very smart woman. I think she's well-spoken. I think she has some good bona fides when it comes to foreign affairs, et cetera. I just wish she would. I liked Nikki Haley, UN ambassador. That's the Nikki Haley who I really started to like quite a bit. So we'll see what happens. I just don't see a path for her. Maybe she's hoping that Donald Trump gets put in prison and then she's the only one left, which I guess is a possibility. I'm not sure.
Can you re-enter? I mean, could DeSantis just jump back in if that happens?
I don't see why you couldn't.
Yeah, right?
As long as you're not past the point where your name could be on ballots.
Right.
So I don't know. Yeah. I guess you couldn't. I would have to look into that, but I don't think it's like a formality. It's like when you lose an election and you concede. Mm-hmm. Are you conceding if the votes turn the other direction that he conceded, he can't come back in?
Right.
No, it's just a nice thing to do. So I think it's just a nice thing to do. Okay, we're going to get to a second subscriber show poll because we didn't have time for it on Thursday. Or no, Patreon was acting a fool on Thursday. So we're going to get to the daily show poll from last Thursday and some questions and comments coming up. But first, there is another risk management strategy live webinar coming up in just a couple days that our friend Zach Abraham and Bulwark Capital is holding. So it's coming up on January 25th. So this Thursday, 3:30 p.m. It is totally free. It's online. If you can hop on and learn a little bit about some of the risks right now in the investment market, especially if you're nearing retirement, if you're close to retirement, if you're in retirement, managing your risk in 2024 is going to be absolutely critical. So join Bulwark Capital Zach Abraham for his live 2024 preview this Thursday, January 25th, with the election looming, continued global unrest, rising cost of living, the market volatility, protecting your retirement portfolio right now has never been more critical. So you can sign up knowyourriskradio.com. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. Again, it's this Thursday, January 25th, 3:30 p.m. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance does not guarantee future results. Sign up. My mom did. My mom did the last live webinar, which I love. All right, let's get to a second subscriber poll. This one was from Thursday. I wanted to make sure to revisit it today because it was on a really important issue. The question I asked you guys, three Tacoma PD officers were acquitted in the 2020 death of Manny Ellis, and they have decided to leave the department. Each will be given a $500,000 payout. Do you believe the payout is too low, too high, or sufficient? A lot of people on Locals said way too low, 50%. So they thought that was too low. Farm Boy 33. I love it. It sounds like an AOL screen name from like back in the day. Look at the money the caring family is getting of Manny Ellis. It's as if they cared about They cared only after he was worth hard cash to them, and they know it even though they have no guts or integrity to admit the obvious. Let's see here. Tina says, I have to assume that they agreed to it, so therefore it is sufficient. Otherwise, who am I to say? Yeah, they probably wouldn't have agreed to a payout that they weren't satisfied with. I wonder, though, if that stops them from being able to sue over their departure. Because if you agree to a payout and you're getting paid, you have to kind of sign away your ability to sue. Let's see. Weisscastle says, not nearly enough information to decide whether it's worth it. But ultimately, this is my taxpayer money, and the waste of it infuriates me. Enlarge, let me see here, a couple more. Chris says, they are being paid to go away so that Tacoma doesn't have to deal with them, and they get to keep their good standing as police officers. And actually, Ed Troyer said, man, if they want to apply for Pierce County, he'd consider their application. He said they were acquitted, no reason not to. Okay, some questions and comments from the live stream. On the education issue, the Washington Education Association, you know, pushing all these absolutely ridiculous things when they should be focused on teaching kids. Actually, Lieutenant Dan says, didn't the education department get flack for hiring a drag queen at some conference, or was that a different government organization? I can't remember. I think it was a different one.
I think it was Seattle teachers.
Seattle teachers.
I believe that, but I'd have to go back. I was going to figure that out by the time I got to it.
I remember the story. That's a good memory. I remember something like that. And also, you're what, using union dues for that? Like, is that, shouldn't you be able to vote on how they use, if they can use your union dues to hire a drag queen?
Well, I think that was the issue, is that it wasn't the union that hired them. It was the school, but I'm going to find it because now it's bothering me.
Let me see. Joseph Hartman says, if you don't complain, politicians then think you agree with them, referring to to parents who, you know, they send these stories to us and they don't say anything to the school. And it's like, you got to say something to the school first and then send it to us. On the felons, allowing felons to vote and serve on juries, Susie says, I can't believe people continue to vote for these lunatics. It's crazy. Let's see. GTBD00 Gumu Jojak says that this is upside down from what our founders and framers intended, and they staked their lives and livelihoods for it. Margaret Down says, mistrials galore with this stupid bill. The defendant wouldn't get a fair trial. Sheesh. Yeah. I mean, if you have someone serving on a jury who committed the same crime that you're accused of, 100% that's a mistrial. Now, I agree with the sentiment that I find it, first of all, in practice, I don't know how it would work. And then two, the prosecution will not allow these people to be seated on the jury. But then why do you need the bill? If in practice it's just not feasible, if they're never going to be seated on a jury anyway, then why do you need it? Carlene Heath says, I'm a felon. I did my time and had my right restored. So it's not a hindrance. It's the way it is. Yes, I vote. Exactly. So you did your time. You paid your consequence. Then you got out and now you can vote. And that's the way that it should be. Krista M says, you knew the consequences of your behavior before you did the crime. If you really wanted to vote and be on a jury, you wouldn't have done the crime. Blaine Bossert on Trump. Another person who has a complaint about something I said about Donald Trump. Let's see it. You're off base if you think anyone other than Trump for this next election. DeSantis made a huge mistake running. No way MAGAs ever vote for Haley. Now, I don't think DeSantis made a mistake running because I do think the environment was different when he entered the race.
When he got in.
Trump was like on the decline. Mm-hmm. And then it was like prosecutions. Oh, that's our guy now. So I actually disagree. I think it's healthy to have a little bit of competition. Trump wasn't the incumbent. He lost the last election. And that is true. He lost the last election against the guy who's currently in office. And I do think it's silly sometimes to think that someone who just lost to the same person should run again. There's some other factors at play here, including Biden's mental decline, the bad things that have happened to the country and across the world under his quote-unquote leadership. So certainly there is a difference, I think, 4 years later. Michael Dean with a $20 super chat. Our lives were better and safer under Trump than the last 2 years under Biden. Common sense 2024. Hey, I don't disagree with that. And again, our saying, common sense is in the eye of the beholder. If you think common sense is putting Trump back in office, you're entitled
to
that.
Out of the two.
Out of the two.
I guess. That out of the two. So I think that's what's going to change this year.
I do feel the need to clarify. Trump over Biden? Yes. Mm-hmm. Trump as a preference? Yeah. No.
Did you have who hired the drag queens?
It was the homelessness conference.
Oh, that's what it was.
The King County homelessness. Yeah, and it was people from all of these homelessness entities from around the state, and they all came for this drag show. Mm-hmm. But so it was our tax dollars that were used for it. That was the thing, because it was part of this show.
Yep, so that's different. If it's your tax dollars, now if teachers want to pay their union dues and spend that money on drag queens, there's nothing we can say about that.
Well, and
however, we can point out that it is not what you should be prioritizing at a leadership summit.
Right, and this particular drag queen, she's not in... I think at that homelessness one, there was some boobage happening, and there was like, it was a very risque show. And this is like a grandma. It's like in a skirt, and
fine.
It's fine, but I'm just saying it's a different vibe. It's not this, you know, promiscuous, like not appropriate for school type thing. And this one's kind of, it's just ridiculous that that's the focus.
Right.
That's what our point is. It's
what is the drag queen going to teach them about about being better educators?
Right.
The other thing that was brought up about that A for Activism book, somebody on Patreon, and it was a really good point, and I didn't think about it. This was a book read to fifth graders, and it was essentially a picture book.
That's what I said. You didn't say that on the show. Yes, I did. I said, why are we reading a picture book to fifth graders?
Oh, I thought your issue was just that the book was read to them.
Well, that too, but...
Oh, I don't remember you saying picture book.
Well, I probably didn't, but that was what I was implying.
But that is
this is a children's book, and it's being read to fifth graders out loud, which you can read your own books in fifth grade.
Yeah, they should be reading...
You don't need a teacher reading a picture book, flipping the pages.
Yes, they should be reading much more difficult books. So not only is it a ridiculous book that teaches kids to be sometimes criminal activists.
Right.
I mean, they're literally like... We're going to have more on this tomorrow.
Yes, it's
but it's
just
a picture
not even appropriate.
Book. So is that the level that our fifth graders are at? That you have to read a picture book to them?
Oh my gosh. I got
based on our test scores, I guess
it
is. I
was talking to a lot of people this weekend, and I have a friend whose kid they're not making him go to class. She found out, he said he was late. Well, turns out he hasn't gone to class in a month, and the school knows and doesn't do anything about it. It's a whole group of
parents,
and they're going to other kids' classes. So those teachers aren't saying, hey, these kids aren't even in my class, and they're in my class all day.
Yep.
And there's just nothing done.
Wild.
So he's being pulled out next week and going back to homeschool.
Good. No accountability, and parents don't deserve to know anything. That is our public education system.
Crazy.
Okay. Good questions. Good comments. Let's get to our closing sanity check, shall we? UFC CEO Dana White gives a masterclass on how to deal with reporters who do exactly what this show is about, who manufacture issues that are intended to divide us, and who ask questions that they're trying to elicit a response that's divisive, that they can then take to their viewers, their listeners, and further divide the country. So White gets asked by my understanding is a Canadian-based reporter about some comments that a fighter made. And what he wants is for Dana White to either condemn them or to agree with them. So he can take that clip and he can go back and say, oh, UFC is terrible, Dana White is terrible, whatever. But Dana White did not bite.
You obviously give a long leash to your fighters about, you know, what they can say when they are up there with a UFC microphone and you are getting into territory of homophobia, transphobia. Like, is there...
I don't give anybody a leash.
Well, I'm saying you...
A leash? Free speech. Control what people say? Going to tell people what to believe? Going to tell people... I don't fucking tell any other human being what to say, what to think, and there's no leashes on any of them. What is your question?
I was asking that question. I'll move on, though.
Yeah, probably a good idea.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how you do that. And that has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We've seen a great uptick in subscribers. I know it's an election year, a legislative session, so we are happy to be the source that you go to get information on all things politics and culture. If you want to sign up, it's just $5 a month. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com. Be part of a growing community that just wants to see Common Sense make a comeback. We'll see you back on the live show tomorrow at noon.